Hello, Cinnabar Moths, or any other kind of moth you'd like to be. Welcome to the Writer's Triangle, Cinnabar Moths podcast about all things publishing and books. Today we are here with Sean, author of The Recalcitrant Stuff of Life, which is coming out on October 15th, 2021. Sean, how are you doing today?
Doing well, Rasta. What about yourself?
I'm doing pretty well. Thank you for coming on. It's a pleasure to have you.
Yeah, man. Thrilled to be here. Thanks for having me on.
And so let's jump right into it. Are you feeling excited about the release of the recalcitrant Stuff of Life?
Yeah, I am. It's funny. I came up with the title, and I have a really hard time saying that word, recalcitrant. But yeah, it's my first novel being published, and definitely pretty excited. You know, a little nerve wracking as we put the finishing touches on the final edits, and we're about 7 weeks out. But yeah, I think we're in a good spot. Not a lot of people I know have read it. Only a very select few I've sort of given advanced sort of first edition readings to, but they've enjoyed it. So there's a whole bunch of people out there that, to be honest, most of my friends have really no idea that I was writing anything. So I'm pretty excited to get it into their hands and get their feedback. So yeah, we're pretty excited up here.
Oh, so you only shared with a few people. I didn't even share that you were writing with most of the people that you know.
Yeah, that's I know you're a writer yourself, Rasta, but I've always felt like if I'm telling people that I'm writing, I'm probably not doing a lot of writing. So it's just one of those things that I always just did on my own. And didn't really like to talk about it all that much. Going back, my goodness, probably 13 years ago, I had written a manuscript, I thought it was pretty good. I landed a pretty high-profile agent up here in Canada where I live, and we came really close to getting it published, and I felt pretty confident it was going to be published with one of the big publishers up here in Canada. So, of course, I started talking about it with people, and it's like that pitcher throwing a no-hitter. You're not supposed to talk about it. So, the plan sort of fell through. It never happened. And I was just like, I'm never talking about my writing again until I definitively have something that I know is going to be published. So, so I don't talk about it really with anyone. So I've got young kids. They're 10 and 8 and a full-time job, as most aspiring writers have. You sort of have to pick your spots, an hour here and an hour there to get the writing in. So yeah, most people I know had no idea I was working on this, this manuscript. So it came as a bit of a pleasant shock to them all when, we came out and said that it was going to be coming out in October. So yeah, we're excited. Definitely excited to get it into everybody's hands.
I think that's great. And you mentioned that you have, kids as well as a full-time job. So yeah, I imagine that takes up quite a bit of time. And so with writing The Recalcitrant Stuff of Life, how long ago did you first start writing it?
Oh, boy. It's been a bit of an odyssey. I started, had the idea for this book going back in about 2008, which was right about the time that first manuscript was getting rejected. My agent at the time gave me some great advice. She said, we gave it a good run with this. My advice is put it back in the drawer and get to work on the next one, which is, again, easy to say, not so easy to do. But so I had this idea for a book that was going to be set in Peru. So in 2008, I went down there and did some gonzo-style journalistic research, traveling into the jungle, spending some time with a shaman. Wound up back in Lima, Peru, where I would meet the woman that would eventually become my wife down there. So it really took an interesting turn in the writing of this novel. But I really got to work on it back in 2008. So it was a long process, that I had to try to fit in with everything else that was going on in my life, which of course included getting married and having kids and holding down a full-time job and, buying a house and all the rest of it. So just like all things, just sort of try to chip away as we went, and finished it more or less in early 2020. I got it largely complete.
Okay. So for you, that's quite the journey then, going from being single and then going in a journey to a different country, end up finding someone that you love, and then getting married, all while writing the book.
Yeah, that's right. A lot going on, definitely. But it's interesting, you mentioned that when I started writing it, I was, a completely different person than I am now. No wife, no kids, probably very immature. Yeah, I'm probably still pretty immature, to be honest, but been able to hold down a job and raise kids, although my wife does the vast majority of the raising of our children. But yeah, it's but I think it all worked, and it all worked out in the novel. So, I think we're in a good place here.
That's really great to hear that you're feeling good about yourself, you're feeling confident. That's always nice to hear. And so, sounds like it took about, what would that be, 12 years for you to have it completely done, and then we're going to it near the end of 2021, so about 13 years to publication. And
Yeah.
so, what was the process like for you? Was it a painful process? Was it, how was it for you?
Do you mean the writing process or the getting published process?
I guess let's start with the writing process, then we can talk about the publishing process later.
Sure. The writing process, I mean, I don't know about painful. At times it feels like it's like a I don't even know, like you're Sisyphus pushing the rock up the mountain. Sometimes it just feels like you're never going to be done with it, especially when you've got so many other things going on in your life. But I remember having a first draft that I thought was pretty good, and I gave it to a trusted reader, and they're just like, "No, it needs more. There's just not enough here." And that it's always a blow to the ego, right? Because I mean, everything you write, you think is the greatest thing in the world, and then you get a pretty good dose of reality. You're like, "Oh, that hurt." A kick in the gut. But that individual was right, so went back to work. And I remember struggling to try to find time when I had when our kids were really young. And I've got another writer friend of mine, guy by the name of Jeff Cole, great science fiction writer. He and he's similar situation. He's got a really good job. He's got three kids. I said to him one time, we're having a couple of drinks. I'm like, "Jeff, where do you find time to write?" He goes, "Honestly, try to do 20 minutes in the morning on my way into work, like on the train, and then I do 20 minutes coming home from work." He goes, if you can find time to write just 20 minutes at a time, it'll sort of start to snowball from there. You gotta keep the fingers moving, gotta keep the juices flowing. And that really, something as simple as that, I found just really motivated me to get back into it. Is like, yeah, it doesn't take much. 20 minutes here, 20 minutes there, and then it starts to go. So yeah, that is really, after that first draft, that was what really got me back writing again, to try to really improve the manuscript and get it to a point where I felt confident enough to get it into some other people's hands and see if there might be an opportunity to get it published. So yeah, the writing, yeah, it was a tough grind, but I think it paid off. And then the publishing aspect. It's interesting. So I had this agent, and I got it into her hands, and she just said, "Honestly, I like it, but I don't think I can sell it." So again, another kick to the gut, and it's just like, oh my goodness. So that, that was again another blow to the ego. But I had some trusted readers, my sister especially, who just, I gave her the finished manuscript, and she read it, and she was sort of blown away by it. She's like, "You cannot stop until you get this published. You'll find the right home for it." She was just so confident and instilled such confidence in me that, I would have never thought of going out on my own and trying to get it published, but that's what I wound up doing. And eventually, I was not active on Twitter at all. But I sort of started dabbling in Twitter, and as I did so, I came across a few really interesting smaller presses in the U.S. I'm based in Canada, and one of those was Outcast Press, and got sort of corresponding back and forth with Sebastian Weiss, and it just seemed like a really nice home for the type of writing I was doing. So I just sort of reached out to Sebastian and said, "Hey, I've got this novel. Yeah. I'm not sure if you'd be interested." And he said, "Well, you know, we don't really publish novels here, but send me a synopsis and we'll see." So I sent him a synopsis and he hit me back pretty quickly and said, "Hey, this sounds really good. Send me the first three chapters." So I sent him the first three chapters and he got finished reading those. He's like, "Send me the whole thing. This is like right in my wheelhouse." So I sent him the full manuscript and it was only a couple of days later. He said, "Yep, yeah, let's consider this a tentative offer. Let's iron out the details, but we're in." And I was just like, "Oh my goodness, like this, it happened pretty quickly." Once you find the right home, it was sort of that you just know right away, like, "All right, this is the place for me." And and I don't want to speak for Sebastian and the folks at Outcast Press, but you know, I think they probably felt the same way. And I think we got a really nice thing going here.
Okay, so that was, it started off with you actually trying to get it done via an agent, but that didn't work out. And then you went through the Twitter process to find Outcast Press. And then did you decide on Outcast Press right away, or did you have multiple different places that you're reaching out to? And then how did you end up deciding on Outcast Press rather than a different location?
I'd submitted to a couple of different places, and so oftentimes your submission gets lost in the void. So you know, there's a few sort of query letters sitting out there in the ether. But it's, you know, as soon as I heard back from Sebastian, it was like, "All right, I'm reaching out to everyone that I had sent query letters to and letting them know that, you know, I found a home and I'm withdrawing my submission." And I have to say it was a pretty satisfying thing to do. You know, you receive enough rejection letters over the years. It's fun to send rejection letters, at some point, folks, that may have rejected you. So no, I knew right away that Outcast was the place I wanted to be. They just,
that's wonderful.
You know, we're sort of like, I feel like we're a team. We're in it together. They're a small upstart press, but I think they've got a really bright future ahead of them. And I'm just really excited to be a small part of that future as we try to get some great work out into the world.
I think that's awesome that you're able to find someplace that you feel so connected with a group of people. And we at Cinema Moth also collaborate with Outcast Press, and we do agree there's some wonderful people over there, and we're hoping for their success as much as you are, I imagine.
Yeah, it's funny. I've said this before. Like my novel deals with some some subjects that are not easy to read about. There's some trauma. There's some drug use. There's a trip into the jungle, and you know, some medicinal treatment with ayahuasca. And there's some bad language in there. And so that's the sort of thing that, you know, would cause some other publishers and presses to just sort of say, "Sorry, it's a little too much for us."
Yeah, yeah.
But as soon as I heard from Outcast and Sebastian, they're just like, "This is," like the opening sentence has a four-letter word in it. And Sebastian was just like, "You had me at the first line, you had me." I was like, "All right, sometimes you just know." So, yeah, I knew they were certainly the right place for me. And they've been just an absolute pleasure to work with, since we connected here.
Yeah, and so with working with Outcast Press and going through the publishing with them, what would you say has been the most surprising thing in that experience of publishing with Outcast Press?
It's probably two things have been the most surprising. One has been the speed and the efficiency with which we've been able to get this work out there. And again, we've still got a little bit of work to do before October 15th, but you know, Sebastian and I started talking in sort of mid-April of this year, and by the time we had sort of put pen to paper and signed a contract, it was June, and he was like, "Yeah, we're pushing for an October 15th publication date," and I was like, "Oh my gosh!" Like, I always, you know, you hear about writers like, "Hey, signed a publishing deal to be released spring 2024." It's just like it's a 2-year process, right? But with Outcast, because they're smaller, they can be nimble, they can just get stuff done. And I feel like there's been a lot of I've felt a lot of love and a lot of attention from them, because you know, they've got their anthology coming out on the same date, October 15th, and And this is the only novel they've got being published in the fall. So that it's just sort of all hands on deck to try to get this done. So I've been really amazed at the efficiency with which we've been able to get this published. So that was the first surprising thing. And the other is just I don't want to say creative control, but I mean, they really value my opinion. The editor, Paige Johnson, has been amazing to work with. She's a really talented editor. She'll make suggestions, but she always says, hey, listen, it's your call. I mean, this is your baby. This is your work. I think you should do this, you've sort of got final say. So it's been great. I mean, I was sort of under the impression that the editor was just going to, slash and burn and take out all of these great things that I love. But, you know, she's been really awesome. And she's just said, this is what I think you should do, but it's your call. So it's been a really productive working experience working with Paige, the editor. So those are the two takeaways, was the speed with which we're able to get this into the world, and then just the creative control I feel like I've gotten working with this great press.
So it's been feeling like a collaborative process rather than, okay, we've taken your book, now go away while we make it work.
Exactly. We own it. Thanks. Yeah, we'll see you when we publish it. Yeah, no, it's such a new experience, and it really is like a dream come true. I mean, I started writing, not seriously, but, I was 16 years old. I wrote this story and all my buddies loved it. And I was like, oh my goodness, like maybe there's something to this writing thing. So I've been writing pretty consistently. I'm 43 years old now. So, that's a lot of years, 27 years writing. And so this is sort of like a dream come true, finally having something published. And so I've loved rolling up my sleeves and getting to work with the folks at Outcast Press and learning everything that I can through the whole process. So it's been great to be as involved as they've allowed me to be. So it's been great.
Well, I'm happy to hear that. And you mentioned, learning more about the process and having a bit more insight because of the transparency with Outcast Press. So I want to ask you, when it comes to the publishing process in a more general sense, rather than specifically with Outcast, is there something in particular that's been surprising to you or something you didn't quite expect with the process?
The one surprising element has been the interest from people outside of Outcast Press. So, like you guys, the Cinnabar Moth and the guys with the Bastard Sons of Oedipus, and there's a couple of other podcasts we've done, Beyond the Zero, people I would have never expected to have any interest whatsoever in me or in the book. They've just sort of been really gracious in reaching out and trying to learn more. So I was under the impression I was going to have to do so much of this on my own, and just, the support that I've received from Outcast Press and from their network of like-minded publishers has been amazing. So that really has been surprising in all the right ways.
Well, we're happy to be part of that pleasant surprise that you're experiencing. And yeah. The Recalcitrant Trust,
See, that's a tough one to say.
I feel like it should be so much easier. It's so smooth in my head. Yeah.
And everybody asks me, like, what does that even mean? Recalcitrant. Difficult, stubborn. It's taken from a quote. There was an old famous literary critic by the name of Lionel Trilling. And he was writing about the work of Faulkner and Hemingway. And he described those guys as being hard at work on the recalcitrant stuff of life. And I remember reading that quote and being like, oh, that's such a great turn of phrase. And I wrote it down like when I think I was 19 years old, and I just filed it away. And I was like, one day I'm going to find a place for this. And this is sort of like the third title that I had penciled in for this book. Like I had one title and then I switched it to something else. And then I settled on, and I was like, oh yeah, that recalcitrant stuff of life, that's such a great phrase. And it sort of ties into some of the themes of this book. So we settled on that, but it doesn't make it any easier to say. So, we're going to have to bring that word back into the mainstream here.
Yeah, for sure. So let me try this again. The Recalcitrant Stuff of Life is coming out on October 15th, which is, compared to the amount of time you spent on it, it's basically around the corner, right? Yeah, and so how do you plan to celebrate the release of the book once it's out there?
Yeah, so it's funny. You know, you've spoken to Sebastian and maybe some of the other folks at Outcast. They're a bit of a wild bunch over there. And when Sebastian and I first started talking, and it looked like we were gonna get this deal done, I said, you know, I've got this like cast of friends who like to have a good time. We've been known to throw a few raucous parties. So I said, my goal is for the book launch to eventually have it shut down by the police because it's just such a wild party. So that's the plan. I live in Canada, just outside of Toronto, in a quiet little town, suburban town called Burlington. And we've got a decent sized backyard. So I think the plan is we're going to have a big little, you know, big sort of book launch in our backyard, October 15th. And, you know, most of my friends, you know, we've all got wives, we've all got kids. We don't get out much these days. I think we're going to light it up a little bit. So, and you know, okay. I'd say virtually nobody I know has ever been to a reading before. And I put myself into that group as well, believe it or not. I've never been to a book launch. I've never been to a reading before. So I always sort of told myself the first reading I ever attended was going to be my own. So, you know,
that's exciting.
I'm looking forward to getting this one out of the way so I can start attending other people's readings. So we're not quite sure how to do a reading. So we're going to put our own spin on it and have a big bash here in the backyard. And I feel pretty confident it'll eventually get shut down by the police. So that's the goal. You know, we're going to sell some books. We're going to have a good time and stay up late, make lots of noise.
Okay. Sounds like you have an exciting plan for yourself with that. And would you say that, speaking of excitement, would you say that your family is excited about the book's release?
They are, definitely. Again, they sort of didn't have an idea that I was working on something. I think they just sort of thought that I'd put the writing thing away. So they were pretty shocked when I said that I'd had this manuscript that I'd been working on for the past 12 years and that it was going to be published. So they're thrilled. I've got, obviously my parents are excited. My dad is, my mom's a great reader. My dad, not so much. He's like, hey, you got to make sure there's an audiobook, okay? Because I don't really want to read it. Make sure there's an audiobook for me. But they're really stoked. My brother hasn't read it yet. He's going to get a kick out of it. My sister has read it. Like I said, she's been my biggest cheerleader along with my wife. And then I've got some uncles and aunts who are voracious readers. I think they're pretty excited. So yeah, the families, they're stoked. We don't have any, you know, quote unquote real writers in our family. Got a lot of great storytellers, but no real writers. So this is it's a big deal for us. We're excited. I come from my dad was born in Ireland. All my uncles born in Ireland. So sort of a long line of barroom storytellers, but no published authors. So it's a big deal for us. So yeah, we're pretty stoked.
Well, that's awesome that you have a network of family that's, you know, excited about your book release, and also that are mostly readers from what the sounds of it.
Yeah, no, definitely. We, we were at my grandmother, unfortunately passed away a couple of weeks ago. She lived to 95, you know, if we could all be so lucky. But we had her her service on Friday, and then we had a bit of a wake at my uncle's place afterwards, and there was so much talk about books. Hey, what are you reading? What's great? What do you recommend? I mean, it's great to be in a family that values great, you know, literature and contemporary literature. And it's just, it's really cool. So much of my influence from the books I love have come from recommendations of family members. So it's pretty cool to grow up that way. And I mean, they're all just sort of self-taught lovers of literature, you know, no real formal education. I've got one uncle who's an English teacher. The rest, you know, they're one's a judge, one's a stock trader. My dad's a house painter. You know, wide variety
of walks of life.
Yeah, but you know, they all have their own sort of unique tastes, and I've sort of gobbled up their recommendations over the years. So there's a little part of each of them in this book. So I'm thrilled to share it with them.
I think that's awesome that you've got the opportunity to share this, and you've taken all this influence from a wide variety of different tastes and perspectives, And you mentioned before that this is your first publication, is that correct? Or is this your first novel that's been published?
Yeah, first novel. I've got a few articles published, in local sort of alt weekly magazines and that sort of thing, but nothing of this size or this importance. So it's a big one for us.
Yeah. And what are you hoping happens next? You know, it's going to be published, but then after that, what are your goals or what are your ideas about what might happen after publication?
That's a good question. You know, hopes and goals versus reality. You know, that's what it is. It's funny. I don't know. You don't have kids yet, right, Rasta?
No, I don't.
No kids. So yeah, I think I mentioned my kids are 10 and 8. It's a great Disney movie that came out earlier this year called Soul. I don't know if you watched that one. Did you see that?
I think I've heard of it, but I haven't had the opportunity to watch it yet.
It is. So, I watch a lot of kids' movies with my children. Yeah. It's like forget the kids' movie moniker. It is a great movie. Yeah, but there's this one part where the guy, you know, his lifelong dream is to play in this jazz quartet with this this jazz singer that he loves, and he finally gets to do it. And then afterwards, he's just, he says, he's expecting his life to be totally different. He says, well, what next? And the jazz singer says, well, we come back and do it all again tomorrow. And he's just like, nothing's changed. It's like, I sort of feel like that's it's going to be great to get it out into the world. I don't think my life is going to change all that much. What do I want to happen? I want people to read it. I hope they enjoy it. You know, there'll be people who don't like it. There's, like I said, there's some pretty heavy stuff in there. I feel like, a lot of people will really like it. This is sort of like a crazy little ridiculous sort of goal I have. I just love to be like riding the subway one day or riding a bus one day and see some, perfect stranger just reading my book. I'd be like, that would just be the coolest thing. And I just sort of, see what their face looks like. Are they enjoying it? I just, for a total stranger to be reading something that I, put so much, of myself into, I just think would be really cool. So, I mean, honestly, that's all I want is just to one day see a perfect stranger reading the book. What do I hope comes in? Of course you want it to sell. And, it's never about the money, it's like, I didn't write the book. I've been writing for 27 years without making any money. So it's never about the money. Of course, if it were by some miracle to become some massive hit and it made lots of money and, it could write full time, that would be phenomenal. But that's probably not realistic, right? I just wanted to get out there. I want people to enjoy it. And, so that's my goal. I hope people read it.
Okay. So you mentioned that you have the goal of, people reading it, but are you thinking about making writing a career or hoping to be able to make a career out of writing? Or are you thinking it's more of a, you want to share your creativity and then you've got your current job and you're comfortable with that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the dream would be to be able to write full time. I mean, I've got a great job. I've been working at the same place for 15 years, work with great people. They afford me a lot of freedom. So no complaints on my current job, but I always say if I won the lottery, the first thing I do is just write full time. That's all. That's, I think any writer, that's the goal. If this were to, again, by some miracle to become some massive hit, it becomes part of the Oprah Book Club. I think that's how you become independently wealthy. And of course, no expectations of that, but if that were to happen and we had enough money to, pay our mortgage and pay our bills and I could write full time, then absolutely. I would love to do that. That's just the dream life. But more realistically, keep plugging away and try to carve out time to write when we can. But I do think, getting one published novel under one's belt will just naturally afford you more time to write. Because, I can tell my wife, hey, I gotta go get to work on the next one. There was something to the first one. We actually got it published. So, No, I got to get to work on the next one. So, and of course, my kids are getting older. Sadly, there's going to come a point in the not too distant future when they don't want to hang around with me. So I feel like in the near future, I'm going to have more time on my hands than I currently do. But yeah, I think the goal would be to write full time. If I could do that, then that would just be a dream come true. So, you know, we'll see. I'll keep playing the lottery. And then we'll see what happens with this book here.
And so seeing what happens with this book and, you know, the dream of being able to make writing a career, one potential way that that happens is, you know, the book becomes a bestseller. If the Recalcitrant Stuff of Life became a bestseller, what would you do? Or would you have any ideas of what you might do with that?
Well, oh man, I'd be thrilled, of course. I think, you know, we'd have a lot to celebrate, you know, myself and the team at Outcast Press. But yeah, if it became a bestseller, I'm not even sure what that means anymore. That means lots of people are reading it. Lots of people are enjoying it. So, obviously we'd love that. It would probably mean we have a little bit of money to do something with. So that'd be awesome. but yeah, I honestly don't know if that would change too much. I don't think it would change the way I write, and I don't think it would change what I want to write next. I mean, I feel like if you have a bestseller, you might fall into the trap of, oh, well, now I've got to write something a lot like that thing I already did because people liked it. I certainly wouldn't want to fall into that trap. I'd want to be true to myself and what I want to write and what I feel like I've got to share with the world. So, it'd be a great thing to happen if it were to become a bestseller, but, I honestly don't know if it would change too much. I'd like to think it wouldn't change me, you know, it's a modicum of fame, but, yeah, well, I guess we'll just have to see. We'll cross that bridge if we're fortunate enough to get there.
Okay. So your idea is that you're going to do your best to keep true to how you want to be as a writer and not let the success get to you, so to speak.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, honestly, the fact that it's being published, I feel like I have achieved, I've achieved sort of a life goal. Mm. And the book that I've written and that Outcast Press is putting out is, I think what, you know, everything I wanted it to be. If it becomes a bestseller, that's great. And if, you know, if there's only couple thousand people that read it, then that's great too. You know, I just hope the ones who read it, that it stays with them. We'll just have to see.
Yeah, I suppose we will have to see. And expanding on that, we will have to see mentality. Let's go beyond bestseller. Let's imagine the Recalcitrant Stuff of Life has the potential to become a movie or TV show. Is that something you would want to happen? And if so, do you have any ideas about which one you'd prefer, movie, TV show?
Yeah, well, see now you're talking. We want financial independence. Yeah, let's turn it into a movie. So many of the books that I love, I either came to as a movie first, or, you know, I loved the book and then it got turned into a movie. Mm-hmm. My favorite book novella growing up, not growing up, when I was 15, 16 years old, was The Body by Stephen King, which is the novella that they based the movie Stand By Me around. And when I've said this on a couple of other podcasts, you know, when we were growing up, me and my buddies, we were completely obsessed with that movie. And we've reenacted it. We camp out down in the creek. We did everything short of stumbling across a dead body that those guys didn't Stand By Me. And it was just an absolutely perfect movie that could never be topped. And then when I was, I want to say 15 years old, I came across the Stephen King novella and I read it and I was just like, oh my God, like the book is better than the movie. We've got this perfect movie and the book is better. Like, how is that even possible? And that's really what made me want to be a writer. Mm. And like I said, so many of the books that I love have been turned into movies. So that would be great. I mean, and if, you know, in the same way that I've gone along for the ride on this publishing experience. Again, this is a one in a million shot, but if it were made into a movie, I'd love to be involved in that and learn as much as I can from that process. Because, you know, who wouldn't want to go to Hollywood? Who wouldn't want to, you know, who wouldn't want to go hang out? Yeah. So that would be, I mean, that would be fantastic.
So following up on this idea of it becoming a movie, do you already have an idea of the type of people or any particular individuals that you'd want to cast for the book in this hypothetical world?
No, I mean, I'd probably leave that to the experts. I do have a buddy, a really good buddy of mine, does some acting. My buddy Sully, he's in some commercials, and he said when he found out this was getting published, he's like, if they make this a movie, you got to get me a part. So he'd be the only one. You know, I'd certainly make sure he has some minor role in it's funny, but, you know, 15 years ago, he probably could have played the role of one of the main characters, but we're all a little older than the characters in the book now, so we might have to play one of the weird guys hanging out at the hostel or one of the weird older guys hanging around the Shaman. Sadly, we're past our prime there, but yeah, no idea on who the actors would be, but, you know, that's probably getting a little ahead of ourselves. As long as my buddy Sully can star in the movie, not star in the movie, make a cameo in the movie, I think it'd be great. And, yeah, so, and then my sister's a singer-songwriter, so maybe they can awesome. Give her a song. But beyond that, we'll let the experts do their thing.
And so following up on the letting the experts do their thing, would you not want to have a lot of creative control during the process, or what would be your feelings about creative control when it came to the movie? Because you mentioned before you're enjoying the creative control that you sort of have with the editing process and such, but what about if it was going into the movie environment and medium?
Right. That's an interesting thought. Again, I feel like we're getting completely ahead of ourselves. I'd like to be a part of it, but, you know, I truly know nothing about making movies, so I'm not sure what I could offer them. I'd probably want to have some say in the script, but beyond that, you know, let's put the aces in their places, let them do their thing, and I'm sure that we'd wind up with a better movie with the movie people making the movie, as opposed to the fledgling author trying to tell everybody what to do. So yeah, I'd let them do it.
Hey, and you mentioned before that you'd want to go to Hollywood if it made it, and in that case, do you have ideas of who you'd bring with you? I imagine you'd bring your wife, of course.
Oh, absolutely. Bring my wife. Yeah, bring my kids. You know, we'll get them down there. Just, you know, just show them what it's all about. Yeah, of course. We'd love to have them see that sort of thing come to life on the screen, for sure. I'd bring them along.
Okay. And then you mentioned before your the body and the work of Stephen King is part of what got you really into writing, right?
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, I don't read a ton of Stephen King, but the body, just as that one off, being obsessed with the movie, was really got me into this idea that the that the book could be better than the movie. But to be honest, I don't read a ton of Stephen King. Nothing but respect for the guy. I mean, he's as big a writer as there is. but my wife is a big fan of his, so I've read a few of his works, but still got some work to do. Haven't read all of his stuff yet.
Okay. But would you want to be, let's assume that, you know, you said before that we're getting a bit ahead of ourselves with just talking about being a bestseller or potentially a movie, but let's talk about fame for a little bit. If you could be as famous as Stephen King, where you lost your anonymity, would you want that level of fame, or would you want a bit of a more scaled back, a bit more anonymous form of fame? What level of fame would you like to achieve if you could just like pin it on a chart or on a graph?
Right. yeah, like author fame is a whole lot different from you know, movie star fame, I think, which is a good thing. I mean, I mean, honestly, I consider myself pretty well read, as I'm sure you are, but it'd be hard to pick a lot of our favorite writers out of like a police line. I mean, honestly, that's a great thing about, it's a great thing about being an author is, you know, only your most diehard fans are going to actually be able to recognize you. Of course, Stephen King's on a whole other level. I mean, he's a rock star writer. I even think of, you know, I love Jay McInerney, and he had a great run in the 80s where he was the rock star writer. But I mean, today I'm sure he can walk around New York City and be left mostly alone. I got some of my favorite contemporary writers, you know, like Lily King. I love her work. T. Corgesson Boyle. I mean, these are heroes of mine. And right. I'm sure they can walk down any street they want and be left alone. I mean, most people don't know who they are. And again, the only ones who are coming up to talk to them are the ones who've read their work and probably want to talk about the work. It's not like, oh my God, there's T.C. Boyle. I have to get my photo with him. Right. I love T. Corgesson Boyle, but I don't know that happens all that much, you know? That's one of the great things about being a writer is I think unless you are Stephen King and none of us are, right. You're going to be left alone. And that's a great thing. There are so few, you know, artistic professions that you can say that about. I mean, any musician is going to be recognized. Any actor is going to be recognized. You know, a lot of painters will be recognized, but the writers, you know, I think we will get left alone. So, if fame is in the cards, then bring it on. I'll take it.
Okay, so you'll take it as far up as it goes, so to speak.
Yeah, again, no illusions about becoming Stephen King, so I don't think we need to worry about that. But, yeah, I mean, you know, if at one point in time I got recognized by one person for being a writer, yeah, I think that'd be a pretty cool thing.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense, yeah. The writing profession does have that unique quality of our face doesn't really get put with the work, even if people know our names, right? Because you might have that experience, like you mentioned, of being on, like, public transportation or something on a bus, and you see somebody, and they're reading your book. And they could look up at you, look right through you, complete stranger still, despite absolutely loving what you've written.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they could just be like, who's this weird guy looking at me? You know, like, even though my face is on the back of the book, you know, they would have no idea, which is great. You know, I think that allows you to be a better writer because you're not, you know, you can be objective. You're never going to be, you know, you'll always sort of be who you are. It'll never go to your head because you're almost never going to be recognized. So I think that's one of the great things about being a writer.
Yeah, I do agree that does help with keeping us grounded as we write. And so today I think that you've talked quite a bit about the recalcitrant trust of the. Why is it so hard to say?
You know what? I think at the book launch we may get some T-shirts made up. Just have the definition of the word. You know, have people say recalcitrant.
Yeah, I know the definition. I've used the word before, actually, but for some reason, I think I'm gonna say it correctly, and I think that's what's happening. I'm tripping myself up. The recalcitrant stuff of life. See, I didn't do it this time. It's fine.
You nailed it. Nailed it.
So the recalcitrant stuff of life. Okay. The recalcitrant stuff of life is coming out on October 15th, 2021. For everybody listening at home, you know, you can mark it on the calendar and be excited about the book launch. And Sean, I'd like to thank you for talking with me today and being on the Writer's Triangle.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Russ. This was a lot of fun. Great conversation. Really, really appreciated chatting with you today.
Yeah, I really enjoyed talking with you as well. And I'd like to thank all of our beautiful moths for listening. I almost said my because I feel so possessive of all our fans, even though it's not just me.
And love it.
Be sure to check out and purchase The Recalcitrant Stuff of Life, coming out on October 15th, 2021. And before we go, though, Sean, could you tell us where to find you, social media, websites, any of the sort?
Yeah, so on Twitter, Sean42, the number 42, and then my last name, McCallum. So Sean is S-E-A-N, the Irish spelling, which makes no sense. Yeah, S-E-A-N-42, and then McCallum, M-C-C-A-L-L-U-M, on Twitter. My writer's website, oh my goodness, it hasn't been updated in forever. So as soon as we get this finished, edited, I'm going to put some time and effort into updating my writer's website, but it's seanmccallum.com. but like maybe hold off till like you know, mid-September to go there because it's totally out of date. But yeah, SeanMcCallum.com and then Sean42McCallum on Twitter.
Okay. And for all, everybody listening, be sure to visit CinnabarMoth.com and check out the transcripts where we'll have the links to all of Sean's social media and the website that he just mentioned. And again, Sean, thank you for coming on today. It's been a pleasure having you and talking with you.
All right, thanks, Rasta. Really appreciate your time.
Yeah, and goodbye.